بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the Most Merciful, the Most Compassionate.
اقترب للناس حسابهم وهم في غفلة معرضون.
The time of people's reckoning has drawn near, and yet they turn aside in heedlessness. The time of people's reckoning has drawn near.
This means that the day of resurrection is near. The day is not far away when people will be made to appear before God to render an account of themselves. The advent of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, has ushered in the last phase of human history. As compared to earlier phases, mankind is now closer to its eventual end. The Prophet, peace be upon him, himself confirmed this. According to one hadith, he pointed to two of his fingers and said, "I and the hour are close to each other, like these two fingers." The statement implies that there would be no further divine revelation between Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the day of resurrection. People were closer to the last day than ever before. It was thus time for people to heed Muhammad's, peace be upon him's, call, as no other guide, warner, and announcer of good news would be raised for mankind.
And yet they turn aside in heedlessness.
People do not take heed of God's warning. They were so immersed in this heedlessness that they are incapable of thinking seriously about what their end will be, let alone paying attention to the messenger who has come to warn them.
مَا يَأْتِيهِمْ مِنْ ذِكْرٍ مِنْ رَبِّهِمْ مُحْدَثٍ إِلَّا اسْتَمَعُوهُ وَهُمْ يَلْعَبُونَ.
Whenever any fresh admonition comes to them from their Lord, they barely heed it and remain immersed in play. Whenever any fresh admonition comes to them from their Lord,
each new surah of the Quran revealed to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and recited to the people, represents a piece of good counsel and admonition.
لاهيةً قلوبهم وَأَسَرُّوا النَّجْوَى الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا هَلْ هَذَا إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ أَفَتَأْتُونَ السِّحْرَ وَأَنْتُمْ تُبَصِرُونَ.
Their hearts being set on other concerns, the wrongdoers whispered to one another, "This person is no more than a mortal like yourselves. Will you then be enchanted by sorcery while you see?" Their hearts being set on other concerns.
The words used here may be interpreted in more than one way. We have opted for the interpretation to be found in the above translation, wherein we take jest to refer to life as a whole. Hence the verse means that because of the unbelievers' indifference to God and the hereafter, they treat their lives merely as a sport and jest, rather than as a serious affair. Alternatively, the verse means that people do not listen to the Quran with the serious attention that it deserves. They rather take it as a jest.
The wrongdoers whispered to one another, "This person is no more than a mortal like yourselves. Will you then be enchanted by sorcery while you see?"
This verse may be translated in either the present or the future tense, and both translations would be correct. It is the chiefs of the Quraysh who whisper among themselves, for they are driven by a passionate concern to somehow counter the Prophet's mission. They rejected outright his claim to be a prophet. They did so on the grounds that he was like any other human being. He ate and drank and went about the markets and had a family of his own. They wondered what was so different about him that he stood out from others and merited a special relationship with God. They were cognizant, however, of the fact that the Prophet, by means of his personality and teachings, had a spellbinding effect on people. Whoever listened attentively to what he said, or had a chance to be close to him, immediately lost his heart to him. They therefore held that it was not wise to have any interaction with the Prophet, peace be upon him, for getting close to him amounted to falling under his spell. Ibn Ishaq, the earliest biographer of the Prophet, peace be upon him, mentions several incidents where the unbelievers accused the Prophet, peace be upon him, of sorcery. Utbah ibn Rabia, the father-in-law of Abu Sufyan and the father of Hind, approached the Quraysh chief saying, "Should you like, I will call on Muhammad and try to persuade him, peace be upon him." This happened after Hamza embraced Islam, and when the number of the Prophet's companions continued to rise, a development which seriously perturbed the Quraysh chiefs. They, the Quraysh chiefs, agreed that Utbah should try to dissuade Muhammad from his course, for they had full confidence in him. Accordingly, Utbah visited the Prophet, peace be upon him, and said to him, "O my nephew, you know well the position you enjoy among us. In terms of pedigree, you come from a noble family. So why have you brought down such a calamity on your people? You have caused division in the whole community. You speak ill of their faith and their deities. You brand our deceased ancestors with unbelief and error. Nephew, if you seek your supremacy in the world through all this, we will raise money and give you such an amount that you will become the wealthiest person. If you are keen to acquire chiefdom, we will make you our chief. If you seek kingship, we will appoint you our ruler. And if you suffer from a malady, we will arrange the best physician to treat you." While Utbah made these offers, the Prophet, peace be upon him, listened silently. When he had finished his long list of offers, the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "Abu al-Walid, have you finished, or do you have something else to say?" To this he replied in the affirmative, confirming that he had spoken his mind in full. Then the Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "Listen to me now. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, Hameem. This is the revelation from the Compassionate, the Merciful." He then went on to recite some verses from Surah Hameem Al-Sajda, and Utbah listened to the Prophet, peace be upon him, in rapt attention. When the Prophet, peace be upon him, recited verse 38 of this surah, he prostrated himself, saying to Utbah, "O Abu al-Walid, you have listened to what I have to say. Now it is up to you to do what pleases you." Utbah took his leave of the Prophet and returned to the Quraysh chiefs. As he approached them, they exclaimed, "By God, Abu al-Walid's countenance is totally changed. This is not the one he went to meet with Muhammad with." When Utbah joined them, they asked, "O Abu al-Walid, what were you able to do?" To this he replied, "By God, today I have listened to something I have never heard before. By God, it is neither poetry, nor magic, nor soothsaying. Leaders of the Quraysh, listen to me and let him alone. Whatever I have heard from him is bound to come about. If the Arabs defeat him, you will not be held guilty of his murder, for others will be responsible for it. However, if he establishes his dominance over Arabia, his dominion will be your dominion. His prestige will mean your prestige." They replied, "Abu al-Walid, you too have fallen prey to his spell." Ibn Hisham, Sira, Volume 1, Paragraphs 293-4. In the reports brought together by Bihaqi regarding this event, there is some additional information. When the Prophet, peace be upon him, was reciting Hameem al-Sajda and reached the verse, "But if they turn away, say, I have warned you of a thunder like the thunder that overtook Ad and Thamud." Hameem al-Sajda 41:13. Utbah put his hand upon the Prophet's mouth, pleading mercy for his people. Another incident reported by Ibn Ishaq is as follows. Once a member of the Arash tribe came to Mecca with some camels. Abu Jahl purchased the camels, but when he asked for the price, Abu Jahl tried to evade the issue. Irked by this, the Arashi went to the Kaaba and invoked the help of the Quraysh chiefs. The Prophet, peace be upon him, was sitting in a corner of the sanctuary. The Quraysh told the Arashi, "We are helpless. Tell the man sitting in the corner about your plight. He will help you recover your money." As the Arashi proceeded towards the Prophet, peace be upon him, the Quraysh chief said to each other, "We will have real fun today." The Arashi conveyed his grievance to the Prophet, peace be upon him, who immediately rose and took him to Abu Jahl's house and knocked at his door. He asked, "Who is there?" He replied, "Muhammad." Amazed, Abu Jahl came out. The Prophet, peace be upon him, asked him, "Give him his due." Abu Jahl did not resist. He simply went in and brought back the money he owed the Arashi. The informer rushed to the Kaaba and apprised the chiefs of all that had happened. He said, "By God, today I came across what I have never seen before." As Hakam ibn Hisham, Abu Jahl, came out of his house, his countenance changed on seeing Muhammad, peace be upon him. And when Muhammad, peace be upon him, asked him to pay the amount, Abu Jahl appeared almost lifeless and enervated. Ibn Hisham, Volume 2, Paragraph 389-90. This surah demonstrates the impact of the Prophet's personality and conduct, and such was the spell of his speech that the unbelievers branded it as sorcery. Hence, they tried to keep people who were not very mature at arm's length from the Prophet, peace be upon him, lest they too were influenced by him.
قال ربي يعلم القول في السماء والأرض وهو السميع العليم.
He said, My Lord knows well all that is spoken in the heavens and the earth. He is all-hearing, all-knowing. He said, My Lord knows well all that is spoken in the heavens and the earth. He is all-hearing, all-knowing.
The Prophet, peace be upon him, did not respond to this false propaganda, nor to the vicious whispering campaign against him, except insofar as to say, God hears and knows all that you say, both what you say loudly and what you say in whispers. Never did the Prophet, peace be upon him, stoop to the level of his enemies, hurling at his enemies the evils they hurled at him.
بَلْ قَالُوا أَضْغَاثُ أَحْلَامٍ بَلْ افْتَرَاهُ بَلْ هُوَ شَاعِرٌ فَلْيَأْتِنَا بِآيَةٍ كَمَا أُرْسِلَ الْأَوَّلُونَ
They say, Nay, these are confused dreams. Nay, he has forged it. Nay, he is a poet. So let him bring us a sign, even as the messengers of the past were sent with signs. They say, Nay, these are confused dreams. Nay, he has forged it. Nay, he is a poet.
This piece of propaganda should be viewed against the situational background pertaining at that time. The Prophet's sphere of influence continued to expand, and this prompted the Meccan leaders to mutual consultation so as to decide the lines along which a propaganda campaign could be launched against him. It was decided that the venue for this campaign should be Mecca. Their campaign was expected to yield good results, the aim being to prejudice the minds of those pilgrims who were visiting the city so that they would not pay any attention to the Prophet's message. A number of people were assigned to visit the pilgrims' camps to poison these visitors' ears against the Prophet, peace be upon him. A variety of notions were put before these pilgrims. At times they were told that the Prophet, peace be upon him, was a sorcerer. At times they were told that the Quran had in fact been composed by Muhammad, peace be upon him, himself, and was falsely attributed to God. At times the Quran was dismissed as a series of insane outbursts, as a conglomerate of incoherent ideas. On other occasions, the Quran was condemned as a piece of poetic imagination, a collection of rhymed discourses falsely ascribed to God. In short, a variety of things were said, but with just one purpose in mind, to mislead people about Islam. The Quraysh were not the least bit concerned with considerations of truth or veracity, and hence they made no attempt to formulate and express a well-considered and definitive opinion on any matter. All this false propaganda, however, had one redeeming effect. It carried the name of the Prophet, peace be upon him, to all parts of Arabia and made him known far and wide. The Muslims would not have been able to give the Prophet, peace be upon him, and Islam the same amount of publicity as the hostile propaganda campaign launched by the Quraysh generated in a very short span of time. For, as a result of the campaign, everyone asked himself who this man was against whom such a storm had been let loose. Many who were disposed to thinking and reasoning decided to make serious inquiries about what the Prophet's teachings were. They were not children, or at least so they told themselves, who could be misled by merely acquainting themselves with his teachings. An interesting instance is provided in the story of Tufail ibn Amr al-Dawsi as narrated by Ibn Ishaq. Tufail refers to himself as a poet of the Dawsi tribe who visited Mecca in connection with his business. No sooner had he reached the city than some of the Quraysh contacted him and tried to poison his ears against the Prophet, peace be upon him. As a result, he developed serious misgivings about the Prophet, peace be upon him, and made up his mind always to remain at arm's length from him. The very next day, however, when Tufail visited the Kaaba, he found the Prophet, peace be upon him, praying there. Overhearing some of the Prophet's utterances, he suddenly realized his attraction to these. Tufail said to himself that he was a poet, a youth, an intelligent person, not an immature child incapable of distinguishing right from wrong. Therefore, when the Prophet, peace be upon him, finished his prayer and was proceeding homewards, Tufail followed him. He arrived at the Prophet's house close behind the Prophet and said, "Your people have told me such things about you which prejudiced me against you to such an extent that I closed my ears lest I might hear what you say. But I like what I have just heard from you. Can you explain to me your message in some detail?" In response, the Prophet, peace be upon him, recited part of the Quran to Tufail. The latter was so captivated by it that he immediately embraced Islam. On his return home, he persuaded his father and wife also to accept Islam. From then onwards, Tufail continued to preach Islam among his tribe. By the time of the Battle of Khandaq, some 70 to 80 families belonging to his tribe had already become Muslims. Ibn Hisham, Volume 2, Paragraphs 382-5. Another report narrated by Ibn Ishaq indicates that the Quraysh leaders themselves conceded that their propaganda campaign against the Prophet, peace be upon him, was totally false. According to Ibn Ishaq, Nadr ibn al-Haris once addressed the Quraysh saying, "The way you have been trying to confront Muhammad, peace be upon him, will be of no avail. As a youth, he was the best mannered among you. He was regarded as one most truthful and most trustworthy. Now that his hair is graying, you have taken to branding him as a magician, a soothsayer, a poet, and a lunatic. By God, he is not a magician. We have seen magicians, and we are fully conversant with their craft. By God, he is not a soothsayer. We have listened to their feigned utterances and their enigmatic sayings. By God, he is not a poet either. We are aware of all genre of poetry, but his discourse does not fall into any of those categories. By God, he is not a mad person either. Are we not aware of the condition of a mad person and of the stupid things he says? Oh, leaders of the Quraysh, think again. What confronts you today is far too serious to be met by recourse to false propaganda. This will certainly not overcome him." Nadir later on suggested that legendary stories from Persian folklore, such as those of Rustam and Isfandiyar, should be circulated throughout Arabia, so that people might become engrossed in those legends and so lose sight of the Quran. It's interesting to note that Nadir did indeed resort to relating such tales. Ibn Hisham, Sirah, Volume 1, Paragraphs 299-300.
ما آمنت قبلهم من قرية أهلكناها أفهم يؤمنون.
Not one township that we destroyed before them believed. Would they then believe? Not one township that we destroyed before them believed. Would they then believe?
The reply to the unbelievers' demand for miraculous signs made in the above verse consists of three points. First, they are told that although they seek signs of the kind bestowed upon previous prophets, they forget that people are often too stubborn, as man's past record only too clearly bears out, to embrace the true faith even after witnessing such signs. Secondly, they do not fully appreciate the grave risk they are exposing themselves to by asking for these signs. For a people who refuse to believe in the truth once they have witnessed God's miraculous signs are not spared. They are simply annihilated. Third, they do not realize it as a result of God's mercy that He does not send them miraculous signs in response to their demands. For although they have persistently rejected the truth, God has still not meted out His punishment to them. It is nothing more than folly for such people to ask for miraculous signs when this amounts to their asking for that scourge which overtook earlier nations when they would not believe even after witnessing God's miraculous signs.
وَمَا أَرْسَلْنَا قَبْلَكَ إِلَّا رِجَالًا نُوحِي إِلَيْهِمْ فَاسْأَلُوا أَهْلَ الذِّكْرِ إِن كُنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ
O Muhammad, peace be upon him. Even before you, we never send any other than human beings as messengers, and to them we sent revelation. Ask the people of the book if you do not know. O Muhammad, peace be upon him. Even before you, we never send any other than human beings as messengers.
This is in response to the unbeliever's question, Is he, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, no more than a man like ourselves? Verse 3 above. They considered the Prophet's humanity to be inconsistent with his claim to prophethood. This is countered by reference to the unbeliever's own recognition of the humanity of those whom they considered to be prophets in earlier times. The distinction between prophets and other people consists in the fact that although they were all human beings, the prophets additionally received their revelations from God. For further details, see Yasin 36, notes 11.
And to them we sent revelation. Ask the people of the book if you do not know.
The Meccan unbelievers should ask the Jews who had joined hands with them in their hostility to Islam and who were guiding them in their machinations against Islam about Moses, peace be upon him, and other prophets of Israel. Were they human beings or did they belong to any other species?
وَمَا جَعَلْنَاهُمْ جَسَدًا لَا يَأْكُلُونَ الطَّعَامَ وَمَا كَانُوا خَالِدِينَ
We did not endow the messengers with bodies that would need no food, nor were they immortals.
ثُمَّ صَدَقْنَاهُمُ الْوَعْدَ فَأَنْجَيْنَاهُمْ وَمَنْ نَشَاءُ وَأَهْلَكْنَا الْمُسْرِفِينَ
Then we fulfilled the promise we made them, delivering them and all those we willed, and destroyed the transgressors. Then we fulfilled the promise we made them, delivering them and all those we willed, and destroyed the transgressors.
We learn from history not only that the earlier prophets were human beings, but also that God fulfilled all the promises He made to effectively aid His prophets and destroy their opponents. The result being that all those nations which sought to humiliate the prophets were, one by one, annihilated. Did all this then not require that the Meccan unbelievers should reconsider the consequences of their conduct?
لَقَدْ أَنزَلْنَا إِلَيْكُمْ كِتَابًا فِيهِ ذِكْرُكُمْ أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ
We have bestowed upon you a book that mentions you. Do you not understand? We have bestowed upon you a book that mentions you. Do you not understand?
This is a response to the various and mutually inconsistent contentions made by the Meccan unbelievers against the Quran and the Prophet, peace be upon him, to the effect that the Quran was either mere poetry, a kind of talisman, a set of incoherent dreams, or merely a medley of fairy tales. What was so exotic about the Quran which drove its opponents to hold such a collection of mutually conflicting opinions about it? The Quran should have been familiar material to them for its discourse centered on the human psyche and on human affairs, on man's nature, man's beginning, and his end. Additionally, the Quranic discourse is replete with signs which are drawn from man's own environment and which point to the truth. The Quran also concerns itself with elucidating the difference between good and evil in human beings, and the human conscience bears ample testimony to the truth of that distinction. There is nothing enigmatic or complicated in the Quran that would make it incomprehensible to the human mind.